This is the Shift Podcast.
Today on the Shift Daily Podcast, Greg Fish wants to turn up the nerdy dial. He highlights how science fiction has had a massive impact on our real-world science and technology. He's embracing the power of sci-fi and says that if we all did it, humanity can grow to new heights, including in outer space. We also get optimistic about all the promises the new minority government has made for their mandate. What would it be like if all of those promises were to come true? We give it a try, see how it feels. The future's looking bright for Canadians. Also, on In Case You Missed It with Ryan O'Donnell, he gets a few crazy TikTok mashups together with Earth, Wind, and Fire, celebrating September 21st, and a very expensive digital hoodie purchase for your kids to ask you for. If they say this to you, do not get it for them. Now, to turn this into hopefully something positive, an outcome that is positive from the election, the good news is that the election happened, and statistically speaking, Canada voted based on the rules and agreements that is the parliamentary system in Canada. So Ryan had a bit of an idea how we could celebrate this. Why don't you explain for us what's happening?
Optimism is an important thing to hold on to in troubled times. So I thought it might be kind of fun if we just actually look at the promises that Justin Trudeau's government have put forward and be overly optimistic about what those promises actually mean. So let's just pretend for a split second that everything promised is going to happen. What does this mean for you? I think in the spirit of staying optimistic, let's just be overly optimistic. Okay, so guys, now you got to pretend, put a giant smile on. Smiling, everything's good.
What's
everything's great.
Smile,
Brendan. I know you could do it.
He doesn't know how
mouth
to smile.
Goes
is.
Up.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes
my lips
get stuck on my teeth.
You gotta wet them a bit, man. Okay. Here's an example of what I mean. Okay. So being overly optimistic, guys. The Liberals have promised a $1 billion fund to help provinces implement vaccine passport systems. You know what that means? That means there's
that
no
mean?
More pandemic. No more.
Yes.
Yes. Oh. It's over, guys. It's
That's
done.
Amazing. This is what it feels like if all these campaign promises come true. I get it now.
Exactly.
So because the election happened and they promised that they were going to spend $1 billion on vaccine passport systems, no more pandemic. I get it now, Ryan. Okay, so what else? What else can we celebrate? Because there never before has an idea that was presented in an election not been fulfilled year after year after year. So this is exciting to me. What else can we talk about?
This is the big one. This is practically what the Liberals won the ballot for. They are going to reduce fees for childcare by 50% on average next year with that $10 a day care average, hopefully across the entire country. You know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to take care of your kids during the day anymore. It's practically free.
All right. So we don't have to parent anymore.
No
so this
more
is
parenting.
Cool.
The government
no
will
more
do
parenting.
It for you.
I'm
the
smiling
so,
for you.
The government is going to pay for it. It's not our money. It's the government's money. And that means they're going to do it. You know, elections feel much better when these promises are instantly fulfilled when the election is over, Ryan. This is great. Okay, where else are we going to celebrate?
Well, jobs. It's what
I like having a job.
Everybody wants, right? So the Liberals are, but many of them, the Liberals want to set up a $2 billion with a B futures fund to help ease the transition for people working in the oil-rich provinces like Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, so that they can start working greener jobs. You know what? I think that means that everybody gets a job in Canada now. No
you
more
get a job. And you get a job. And you get a job.
Well, the big
thing, don't have to have a solution. We just get jobs.
No. Big thing for me is I need more than one. I need lots of jobs. Lots and lots,
lots
of jobs.
Yes.
The government
is going to burn through them all really quickly here.
Oh, hopefully you don't dry up the entire $1 billion fund there, or $2 billion.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? It feels much better knowing that $2 billion of jobs makes the fact that energy in Canada is the number one export and funding mechanism that we have, because based on the promises, that doesn't matter. There'll just be money and jobs for everybody. This feels good.
Speaking of money, when they released their platform on the 1st of September, which feels like it was 10 years ago, introduced a big spending plan. $78 billion in spending over 5 years, including 13 this year. Liberals have promised to impose a minimum 15% tax rule for the rich bracket, the highest bracket, which will remove, quote, their ability to eliminate their tax obligations. Are they taxing the rich? And the reelected Liberal government would also impose an anti-house flipping tax and a federal vaping tax. No more cringy people vaping. Wow. When I say cringing people, it's mostly just 16-year-olds trying to vape in the bathroom at high school.
Can you imagine if you were trying to vape and flip a house at the same time?
Not in Canada. But this is the big thing. The Liberals are counting on billions of dollars in fresh revenue from these new tax measures. I only hear that as one thing. Money, 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 money for everyone. You want money? I want some money.
This is great. I feel like it's really exciting that $13 billion in revenue is going to come in with all these people that just got their new job for free. And then they finally saved up enough money to buy a house. And then they flipped it to make more money, but then they get punished for it. So they go relax and have a vape. Okay, this is good. I like this.
This is great.
Yeah.
And this is the big one here.
All right.
I saw a young guy. I want a home one day, but I'm worried about it. I'm worried about being be able to afford a home before I'm in my 50s. I am. Don't worry. My fellow millennials, the Liberals have got our backs. They say they will build, preserve, or repair 1.4 million homes in 4 years and have promised $4 billion in funding for municipalities that ramp up home building. You know what that means?
What?
I'm going to have a home before I'm 40. You get a home, and you get a home, and you get a home,
and you get a home.
Yes.
That's exciting. Although I got to tell you, as a guy who's actually over 40, on behalf of everyone who's over 40, I wish we could afford homes too. But I guess that's not allowed because you only get a home if you do it under 40.
Yeah, why? That's just That's not nice. Like I'm so close. I'm not gonna make it. I'm not gonna make the cut.
Oh, don't worry. You'll get a new job.
That's true. Just take one of these. Jobs.
Yeah.
There'll be lots of them for me.
That's right. And all the people that get taxed from the people who own houses already and who actually work hard on them to repair them and then sell them, they don't worry. They're going to get shut down and money's going to come to you so you can buy a house by the time you're 40. But don't worry also, if you don't make 40, they'll just take half of it in taxes through RSPs. It's fine. Feels good.
Yeah.
It works out either way.
The biggest thing too is I won't be 40 in 18 months anyway, so I don't think it'll matter. Sorry, I ruined the optimism.
Okay, wait. We gotta reset here. I am fully expecting that tomorrow I'm gonna wake up to the sound of a helicopter and it will be Justin Trudeau personally piloting it and dropping a house right in the middle of my street, and that's my new home. I'm expecting
just
for you.
Well, I have this to say. Election promises. Many of these exact promises have been around in some form or another for more than 15 years. But hey, positive.
This is the Shift Podcast. Welcome to the world of weird things with Greg Fish.
Greg Fish joins us. He's from California. That's where he is right now. And he does subscribe to a very, very weird world of things. That's for sure. Worldofweirdthings.com. It's a blog. It's a podcast. There was so much happening there. And I feel like I should just hand this over to Ryan O'Donnell for the conversation, being such a fan of science fiction. Fishy, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for being here. For sure. Are we about to nerd out like we never have before? What's the deal?
I don't know if we've never nerded out like this before, but we're definitely going to try to reach new heights of nerddom. Or at least I'm going to encourage, people to reach new heights of nerddom, at least for themselves.
The stratosphere of nerdness. That's where we're going, huh?
Or orbit, if that's what you want to go.
There we go. Okay, tell us about the forgotten power of science fiction. That's the headline on the story.
So one of the more interesting things that I've always found about science fiction is that this is a genre that is actually incredibly influential and has really contributed a lot to the world that we live in today. A lot of inventions have come straight from science fiction. Scientists read some of these ideas and some of these stories and said, hey, this sounds actually kind of interesting. I want to try and build that. And there are just these huge laundry lists of inventions that either came straight out of science fiction novels or science fiction novels influenced them. I mean, submarines, space travel, tasers, nuclear energy, nuclear weapons, all of that came from the pages of sci-fi.
I think of Star Trek and the little communicator logo button pin thing they always used to have. I mean, it's not too far off from what we do with Bluetooth speakers, headphones, and cell phones today.
That's true. But also, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of did some of these things first. You know, that they had electronic tablets. They had things that looked like space shuttles.
You're going to have to forgive me a little bit. I played sports, so... I don't know all the history of space movies. You're going to have to hold my hand.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. No one's perfect. We'll get through this together.
No one's perfect. All right. I love it. Greg Fish. Okay. So where do we go here? There has been an awful lot of work done around just this, the power of science fiction, the impact it has in our lives. And not only that, I would go as far to say as boredom and imagination, incredibly important.
Absolutely. So last week, we talked about the fact that we need to dream more. We need to allow ourselves to really kind of open our minds and interact with something new and something creative. So one of the questions that I thought about is, well, what would that be? How do we do that daydreaming? How do we interact with media that challenges us? And the first thing that I thought of is a lot of people who are trying to create things are looking towards fiction, especially science fiction, to imagine how things could be, how the world could be. And it's actually extremely relevant today because, you know, in Canada and in California, we've recently had these elections that I want to kind of call the Mobius strip elections. We ran around a lot and then we kind of ended up in the same place where we were because the alternative was we either do the things that we're doing now, and we're not necessarily too enthused about them, but this is where we've ended up. But the alternative was worse, or at least the majority of people thought that the alternative was much worse. And in some cases, it definitely objectively was. And so it feels really disheartening to have to go to the polls and say, well, I'm not too happy about what's going on now, but I don't want things to get worse. I'm going to vote for the status quo instead of what is it that we actually really want. So if we're going to try and spend more time thinking about how we want the world to work, how we want to change things, let's really kind of open up our minds and interact with things and explore things that allow us to do exactly that. You know, I would really strongly encourage people to spend more time in creative pursuits and really kind of imagine based on what they're seeing, imagine what they want a world to be like, what kind of policies would they want to adopt, what kind of inventions would they like to see created, and what kind of world they want to live in, and then get actually fired up about it and go out in the real world and demand just that. Now, obviously, you know, let's keep it realistic. You know, we can't exactly go to space agencies and say we want faster than light travel because we don't know if that's possible. But something like we'd like to expand the space program and mine asteroids is another one of the things that we talked about on the show, why this would be a great idea and would generate a lot of jobs and would be a very interesting and environmentally positive undertaking. We can find a lot of ideas like that and really kind of challenge our current worldview and then come in and say, okay, who wants to support this? What candidate is out there that either supports this, or if there's no candidate out there, you know, and you feel like you could do a good job, put yourself up and say, hey, these are some of the things that I am actually for, that I support, that I think could be actually viable. And some of them, yeah, they sound far out. But at the same time, what are we going to do? We're just going to sit around and do the same thing that's kind of driving us crazy right now. So this is really, I think that this piece is really less about science fiction in general and more about promoting the kind of worldview that it tries to give us, that kind of ability to look at the world, not as it is now with all of its preconceptions, with all of its history and current context, but to really focus in on a particular problem or a particular aspect of the human condition and start asking what if in a more abstract sense. Because again, all of the systems that we have today, everything from monetary systems to systems of government, are things that we created ourselves. And these are things that we can change, that we have changed before, and then we will change again. It's just a matter of when are we gonna change them? If we are unhappy, and evidence says across the world, that many surveys say we are very unhappy as a civilization, as a species, well, how do we change that? How do we make it better? And the answer is, let's start actually thinking about how we're going to make it better, turn into concrete plans, and make sure that those plans are actually followed.
Okay, so somebody might say, who is more of a square thinker, would say, that's pretty fantastic, Fish. It's pretty fantastic to think that, you know, if we want to have badges on our chest for Alice Star Trek communications, and we had said that in the 80s or the 90s, 70s even, that's pretty fantastical. No one's going to be able to do that. Who's going to pay for this? How are they going to make it happen? Now, I suppose it takes you to a place about, like you said, the amount of influence that science fiction has had on our world today. Because technically, while it's not exactly the same, we do have that today. So is it fantastic to do that, or is it just necessary and it works itself out?
It is necessary, and it does work itself out when the actual thing is scientifically plausible. Now, like I said, we need to practice some critical thinking here and realize that not all things are going to work out the way that we want. For example, there's a lot of dreaming about fusion power, and we seem to be edging closer and closer to making fusion viable. We can ignite a fusion reactor, but we can't keep it lit long enough in order for it to generate more energy that we put into it. So any policy that says, hey, we'll invest heavily in fusion and we'll have all these fusion reactors working, That's not going to happen until we have a viable fusion reactor. So we could say we'd like to support more money to make sure that this happens and keep a steady pace of research, while we know that this could still be viable. So again, this is that kind of moderation that I'm talking about. But on the other hand, we've definitely have tried and have been trying this approach where any solution that's not immediate, that doesn't just, you know, drop out of the sky, that involves us doing something new and something different, is immediately just gets thrown away. You know, we've been doing this for years now, and it's gotten us nowhere. In fact, it's gotten us to places that are definitely worse, depending on where you live. So, I mean, one of the big frustrations that, you know, I have as an American is that when there's an idea to actually fix something, to really undertake a big project and fix a festering problem, there's this big chorus of pundits that tells us, no, it's a utopian pipe dream. It will never work. It's never going to happen. It's going to cost too much. And if you point to other countries where this has been successfully done, say, look, they're doing it. This is working. This is saving them money. Even places in the United States that have already tried the solution at scale. Yeah, this works. Nope, it'll never scale up. It'll never work. It'll never get done. And then we look at something, you know, 10, 15 years later, the problem is worse than ever. We have to come up with more and more drastic solutions. And we're again told that this is just utopian thinking. It's never going to happen. We should abandon all hope. How do you run a society like that? You can't just say this is unrealistic. Who's going to pay for it? These are fine questions to ask, and we should definitely come up with answers for it. But those answers don't have to be perfect. We can keep working on those. And we can't approach everything from the standpoint of it'll never work, it'll never happen, because we just end up in the same place that we do now, and we never actually solve anything until we're forced to.
So, Greg Fish, you have on your article a couple of movies as examples that things, you know, sort of inspire this. Science fiction is incredibly powerful. Dune is on there. There's a couple of others, too. So specifically, what are some of the science fiction stories that we might recognize that you think, you know, are good examples of impact?
Well, obviously, Jules Verne's work was incredibly influential in creating submarines, in inspiring space travel, and not just as a way to toss a rocket somewhere or send robots somewhere, but actually send humans on expeditions. H.G. Wells has written a lot of things. You know, obviously, The Time Machine is a big deal, but he's had numerous other works that are credited with helping along the process of discovering nuclear energy and nuclear reactors and ultimately nuclear weapons. There are definitely some influential comic books like The Watchmen, which goes pretty far into our society's reliance on magical solutions and charismatic superheroes that will solve all of our problems. The Foundation and The Last Question by Isaac Asimov are very influential. Obviously, The Foundation is a big series. It's a trilogy. But also, on top of that, we also have The Last Question, which is a short story about that kind of lets us think about the universe as a whole and humanity's place in it.
I don't know. I think it's cool. I think it's just it's funny how you and I think about sort of the same thing, and you have this very, very big view of it. And I really look at it kind of like, if we hadn't gotten bored and had some time to think, that we wouldn't have come up with some things. So, and maybe I'm just hearing it this way and this is just weird, but I sort of think of it as nothing, right? It's not so much the science fiction as it is when we have nothing else going on in the moment, meaning we're actually be present to our problems and our solutions, everything else, as opposed to knowledge from the past, some of this old idea that we keep trying to bang our head against the wall and expect a different result and try things over and over again. Am I hearing you differently, or have I just sort of taken the different look at the exact same coin?
I think it's just a different look at the exact same idea. We're coming up with new thoughts, and well, what if we could do this, and what if we could do that? And in some cases, it involves robots and space travel and looking 1,000 years into the future, and we call the result science fiction. And then we have all these very influential short stories and novels and movies and comic books. And then whenever it comes to awards season, and when we say, oh, we appreciate art and artists, we promptly forget about it. And meanwhile, you have nerds like me reading it going, oh, that I think I could make that. I really think that I could actually make this happen. And boom, we end up with space travel and satellites and computers. Yeah,
that's cool. Okay, so you talked about the election. And here in Canada, we just literally finished our election on Monday night. Federal election, it was something that happens in Canada when it gets called by the leader. It happens in 5 weeks. It's a lot different than where you are in the United States, but it happens pretty quickly and gets done. The outcome of the election is with the exception of a handful of ridings and seats, is virtually a carbon copy of what happened 2 years ago. It's virtually the same. And it is, so is that, and there was an awful lot of lofty notions tossed about in this election. Do we even want that? Are we lazy, complacent? Are we scared? I mean, it seems to me, to your idea of thinking big to change or at least have an impact on all these problems, it seems to me that in Canada's election, everybody voted, nobody wants anything to change.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think, and you know, California sort of had the same issue where we had this recall election that nobody really wanted and no one really wanted to participate in. And we basically said, no, we're just going to keep things as is. But I don't think that that's necessary. It's not the case that people don't want anything to change. I think it's the case that we're going through a tough time right now with the pandemic, but also we're not really seeing a lot of alternatives. We don't really have enough people coming out and saying, these are the plans that we have for all of these changes that we want to make. And this is how we're going to get it executed. And this is what we'll do if you elect us into office. There's a lot of very vague, very focus group shopped political speechifying, but it doesn't really amount to much. And when it comes down to that, I don't think people just think, well, why should we change things if we're just going to get the same thing over and over again?
So you're not a political scientist. You are a computer scientist. So from the lens of science fiction, because you and I, we're not political people, but from the lens of science fiction, do you really think we're at the cusp of big change in the next 10 years? We had this conversation last night with The Shift about the election specifically, that the generational shift could be starting. From the science fiction lens, do you think that that's a case in Western politics?
I absolutely think that that's the case. And on top of that, you know, being in the computer field, I see a lot of these changes coming, especially with AI, with automation. It's already changing the world. The reason why we have so much of the turmoil that we have today and so much indecision that we have today is because people can't keep up with it. So it's not even so much that the change is coming. The change is already here, and we're not dealing with it. Instead of saying, how do we embrace this change? How do we turn it into something productive? How do we use it to reimagine the way that we've done things? How do we look at some ideas that have been there in the past and some plans that people have created? Because there have been a lot of concrete plans for how we turn automation into a life of creativity and research and leisure and innovation dating all the way back to the very beginning of the 20th century. And they've been updated ever since. So all of these things are there for us to grab and reach out and embrace. And we can't do that because a lot of the people in charge just don't want to, because they think it's going to hurt their bottom line, even though it won't. Or they can't wrap their minds around it because they can't or don't want to. And a lot of people out there have kind of just been put into this rat race of, you know, hey, got to keep my head above water, got to keep my head above water, can't think, you know, big thoughts, can't imagine big ideas. I have to survive, which is understandable, perfectly 100% understandable. But this is why we've ended up in that situation right now. Change is coming. We haven't figured out how to embrace it. And that's why we're at each other's throats.
Okay, that's fair. I like it. It's an interesting look at all of it. And the thought that science fiction can really be part of the solution is great. I only have a few seconds here, Greg Fish, but I do have to ask. Okay, then, nerdo, what is the best space science fiction, whatever, movie or show that warms Greg Fish's heart?
You have
to choose. You brought it up. Your topic. Sorry, buddy.
Oh my God. That is very, very difficult.
It's not a contract that you have to live by for the rest of your life. You can change your mind later.
I know, but I'm gonna have to go with The Foundation.
Ryan O'Donnell, best space movie, science fiction movie, whatever it is for you.
Oh my goodness. It's like Star Wars, but also V for Vendetta, but that's not space. That's just kind of science fiction.
Sure.
Space movie. Interstellar. There it is.
Brennan Kelly?
Oh, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, 100%.
That was very confident. You hear that? That was good. Greg Fish, thanks for being here, brother. It's very great to
Always
see you.
Always a pleasure.
It's worldofweirdthings.com with Greg Fish. You can check out his website, his blog, and his podcast is all there as well.
It's The Shift Podcast.
In case you missed it on the radio, here's...
I don't know.
O'Donnell.
I don't know. It's just such a great one line. Don't give me PTSD. Oh, seriously.
It's getting backed up again.
It's not. My toilet is fine. There was not another emergency. There nearly was. but there will not be a second Punami in my home. Also, Shane, that clip runs on for 30 forever.
I can still check the seal on that. Yeah.
We're about accuracy here on the Shift. And if I'm going to play his toilet sound effect, we need to get the whole thing of the toilet sound effect. You know, if I'm really going to be green on this, I need a toilet sound effect for the big button, and I need a toilet sound effect for the little P button, the small flush, right?
Or it could be like mine, where it does this like really high-pitched squeak just ever so faintly forever, unless I go in and adjust the little fleshy knobble.
That's annoying.
I'm a plumber, yeah.
I'm smiling.
It's still going.
I'm optimistic.
It's almost done. Wait.
Okay. Oh, there it is. Okay. Before we dive into some of the really fun stories that I know many people missed, I wanted to share this amazing piece from Global's Mike Armstrong. I mean, in that last bit, we got overly optimistic about the election. And I know a lot of people, including some of my family and many of my friends, are feeling, what was the point of all of that? Why did we do that? Why did we spend all this money and all that? And I very much agree with that sentiment. I think it's fair. I mean, this snap election presented pretty much more of the same. It's almost a splitting image of the parliament elected in 2019. So the question is all of this pointless? I don't really think so. And I think Mike Armstrong does a really great job of explaining why heading to the ballot box cannot be taken for granted, and that we kind of need a reality check a little bit here in Canada about this. So please enjoy.
There was a time when we couldn't do this. Well, people like me could. White, landowning men really haven't had much trouble voting through history. But the lineups at polling stations would have looked very different if you went back through time. Before 1960, First Nations couldn't vote without giving up their Indian status. Before 1950, the Inuit couldn't vote. Asian Canadians didn't get the right to vote until 1948. And if you went back to 1917, basically half of the entire country, women, couldn't vote. So back to today. It's a right that's easy to take for granted. And a lot of us do. Votes are still being counted, so the final voter turnout still isn't known. But it's not good. It may be just under 60%, which would make it the worst voter turnout in a federal election ever. During this election, the world watched an entire country lose the right to vote. Women or men, there will be no visits to a ballot box in Afghanistan for the foreseeable future. No more fingers dyed to show they'd just cast a vote and had literally put their lives on the line showing up to do it. Well, they wish they had our problems.
Done in Afghanistan.
Elections aren't easy, they're bitter, and they're not cheap. At $600 million, they're really not cheap. But we might want to avoid saying they don't have any value, even one where it feels like no one got what they wanted. It's kind of fun and it feels accurate to shrug our shoulders and say, all that for this? Well, maybe we're pretty much the same country we were in 2019. Maybe most of us still feel pretty much the same way and support the same people we did then. It feels like we've got the proof. So maybe we should try not to take that expression of the will of the people for granted. And considering the brutal year and a half we've all just had, the fact we're not more divided may be a good sign. Mike Armstrong, Global News, Montreal.
I like
I'm smiling.
I am I have a big smile. Yeah, it's such an amazing vote. Yes. Should that election have happened? Probably not. But it happened. And the fact that we could vote, the fact that we had that right, and still, despite the very low voter turnout, millions of people did, is amazing. And we should be proud of that fact, that even if nothing changed, we still made our voices heard one way or another. And that's kind of what I'm holding on to as I am still trying to figure out how I feel about this election. And
well, you know, you do raise a good point. I mean, but it was expensive.
It was very expensive. I wish there was a way for elections to be cheaper in Canada.
They got to put me in charge. I'd make those things frugal.
Very frugal.
Yeah.
You would, right?
Yeah.
It's true.
Millions and millions.
I was just going to ask Brendan, what would be the cost-cutting measure you would have to take?
Well, I kind of like how my mail-in ballot was. This is a blank piece of paper. Just write. Mm-hmm. Just write the name. And in the case of like the local ridings and everything that we were talking about earlier with the candidate who withdrew, still getting elected, I think maybe some electoral reform. Just have people write NDP or Liberal or Justin or whatever. And it's up to the poll worker to figure it out. As long as it's close.
Mm-hmm. It's true. You know, they could always just, you know, I don't know, just listen to our conversations on our Alexa or whatever and be like, I'm pretty sure he said Justin.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or, and this is my thing. Let's just make it more convenient for everyone. All Canadians will be given an e-scooter so they can get to their voter stations in a green
will
way.
Will it be an e-scooter with racing stripes?
Yellow absolutely.
Ones? See, this isn't frugal anymore.
You can pick
anymore.
The color.
This is not frugal.
There's a great text here that I want to read from Andy. It says, when my white great-great-grandfather came to Canada in 1848, he was not allowed to vote because he did not own any property.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder. Yeah. It really
cool.
is.
Very cool reminder. Thanks for that, Andy. Mm-hmm. Okay. You guys want to have some fun now? I want to have some fun now. It is now September 22nd. However, a few hours ago, it was September 21st. And
how does that happen?
I know, time, right? It's fall now, but the 21st is a special day.
It's fall later today.
Well, Google, no, not according to Google, because already if you open up Google, they already have the leaves pictures all over and it says first day of fall. And if Google says it, that means it's true, right?
It's true. It's true. Google owns us. Yeah.
Yes.
I suppose.
Googleizer.
Great. I mean, yeah, if that's the thing, if Google is the defining,
it is.
Thought you would pick up expert. On my sarcasm a little bit there.
Yeah, it's 3:21 p.m. standard time today.
Thank you for
come
that.
On Google.
Okay, cool.
Google's got premature autumn elation.
They
we were making up words that goes with pumpkin haggis, and we've got
the pumpkin.
We start
okay.
a shift dictionary.
Oh no! There'd be a lot of typos in there. The shiftinary.
Oh,
nice. Anyway, on TikTok, people were celebrating the 21st of December. December. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Of September, because it's the best day for disco. Let's head over on the TikToks.
Good morning. I'm Ryan O'Donnell with today's
TikTok, TikTok, TikTok
breakdown.
It was the 21st. Of September. Do you remember?
Do you remember?
One of the best songs ever made. Ever made. It's mm-hmm. just like the ability to make you smile and dance. That is that song. It's amazing.
And probably one of the best songs ever remixed that made it amazing too.
Yeah. And we mentioned this briefly earlier in the show, and you said some young kids might not even know the song, really. But interestingly enough, the movie Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller, when that came out, the very end of the movie ends with a dance number to that song. That was the first time I ever heard it, and that's where I fell in love with the song, because I watched that movie when I was really young. That song is still put in movies. People know that song. And on TikTok, there were thousands of videos of people posting them, dancing to the songs, whether it's in groups by themselves, just appreciating the disco vibes. And it was nice. Honestly, I needed it. It's just very positive energy on TikTok. But it was also an excuse for people to post mashups where they take this legendary song and combine it with a completely different song. And I listened to many of these mashups, but I heard one that I had to share because it is shockingly good and oh so wrong. It comes from DJ Cumberbund, which is the best name for a DJ ever. Yeah.
Sounds inviting. Who'd you get for your party? DJ Cumberbund.
DJ Cumberbund. I love it. Anyway, this is a mashup of September by Earth, Wind, and Fire, and a very, very famous heavy metal artist. Please enjoy.
Maybe it's not too late.
Wow.
Right? Right? I don't know how that works. I love that he put the little I in there and the echoing. Yeah, that was TikTok today. It was a very pleasant place to be. Sometimes it's weird, but often it's just kind of nice.
I like it. Well done.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad. Okay. Now here's a story that'll make you shake your head. I am not someone who is financially responsible. This is a well-known fact. I love my sneakers. Really? I love my clothes. I love my things. But high fashion brands like Balenciaga, Gucci, I've never really gotten into that, mostly because at the end of the day, you're spending $300 for a t-shirt. And you'll never get me to do that. So keep that in mind as I present to you this story. Fortnite, the video game. Fortnite was at one point not just the biggest video game in the world. It was the biggest thing in the world. It was enormous. This game where you could go online and play with your friends and have a battle royale was just everywhere. At one point, they had 125 million players active at one point. Wow. It earned millions of dollars per month and $9 billion in its first 2 years. One video game made $9 billion.
That's pretty amazing.
Absurd. So that's a lot of money.
Billions and billions and billions.
Thank you, Donald. So much money is to be had here. So they partnered with someone that maybe can show off that, you know, the money side of Fortnite. I'm going to play you some music. This is part of an ad for a new set of skins that you can add to your character in Fortnite. In the video game, you can run around wearing these skins. This is a real company they've partnered with. I'm going to play you the music, and then I want you to tell me, you know, who you think this might be partnered with. So take a listen.
I defer to Brennan Kelly.
I'm going to say Kraftwerk.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some indie electronic. No, it is Balenciaga. Fortnite has partnered with Balenciaga. So now you can wear Balenciaga hoodies that say Fortnite on the front in the video game, which is really lame. Can you imagine being killed by someone in a video game and they just run past you wearing a Balenciaga hoodie? That I think that's the stupidest thing ever. But it gets worse because, of course, they made this into real merch. The Fortnite hoodie. A hoodie made by Balenciaga that just says Fortnite on the front. How much do you think, guys?
$600.
$725.
Wow, what an amazing guess without reading ahead.
He read it. You gotta stop doing that, man. Yes, $725 for a hoodie. It gets worse. The hat. It's just a dad hat that says Fortnite on it. $395.
Hey, I resemble that.
No, I love dad hats. They're my favorite thing. I wear dad hats like every day. A denim jacket says Fortnite on it, $12.95. A shirt, not a t-shirt, a button-up, $9.95. And a crew neck, $1,150.
When you say $9.95, you mean $995?
Yeah.
How much does it cost to buy these clothes inside the game?
$20.
So this is the future, my friends. Listen carefully. So you go get a game, you download the game for free, you play the game, you hang out with your friends, you can turn on the radio, you can listen to music, play video games, run around shooting people, building things and whatever. Vanity has taken over to a level where your child or grandchild will pay $20 for a digital shirt inside the video game to look good. That is the future.
Yeah. And we are trying to preach fiscal responsibility in an election.
It's not frugal. Yes.
And I have to, one more point. This is a very popular game with kids. Christmas might get a little expensive this year when the parents look at the Christmas list and see, I'd like the Fortnite Balenciaga hoodie, Mom. Like, it's just not okay.
This is the green generation that's going to live green, and they're sitting playing video games on massive servers networked around the world on TVs, probably snapping each other their pictures of their real Burger-Lago or Mar-a-Lago hoodie, and then their digital one online to show their friends all at the same time being green. And then probably throwing their paper bag into the garbage because they didn't think to put it in the green recycling.
I was really hoping it was Kraftwerk.
Me too.
I'm smiling.
Thanks for listening to the Shift Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show and share with anyone you like. Get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CuriousCast.ca.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.